The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yeah, we're back for another week. Happy holidays, everybody. We're taping this in between Christmas and New Year's.
Was there some doubt that we'd be back this week that I didn't know about?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I hope not.
I hope not, too.
Just kidding. We're fine.
We're all good. Yes, we're still here. And that is the voice of Derek James. I'm Manny Hill. Of course, we got a third voice in with us this week in studio. He covers the Minnesota Vikings for 1500ESPN.com. Also does some work on the Minnesota Wild during the hockey season as well. But many of you may not know that he is also a big basketball fan. Matthew Collar is here. What's up?
I've been begging to get on this podcast since I started, basically. I started 2 years ago, and I listened to the podcast, and I wanted to be on the podcast to talk hoops with you guys because I spend so much time breaking down football tape and talking to football players and just have my head in the Vikings locker room all the time that it's fun to break out and just talk every time we're walking around the halls, talk hoops here. So thank you for finally making this happen, my friends.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Now, you came from upstate New York, correct? Mm-hmm. And while growing up, were you being in that area, were you a huge Knicks fan? Were you Syracuse basketball? Where, growing up and liking basketball, like what, where was like your
Toronto
diehard?
Raptors.
It was
a fandom come from
New York Knicks early on, and okay. I just happened to land in really great timing when I was starting to really understand what was going on in sports, and that was when Jordan was playing baseball, and the New York Knicks actually had a chance, because as long as Jordan was around, nobody else had an opportunity to win a title, but for those couple of years while he was away from the game, I believed that the Knicks had a possibility of doing it. They get to the NBA Finals and lose to the Rockets, mm-hmm. and then I think we're knocked out by the Pacers the next year. That was Ewing going to the basket and just a little too much on the finger roll there.
Rolled right out the back of the rim.
And they were so good. The team identity was great with Charles Oakley and Anthony Mason. I loved the toughness of the team. I love when they would get in brawls with the Pacers, the series they had with the Pacers. And even though Indiana was the most hated team, I loved Reggie Miller too.
Yeah.
So every time that they would match up, it would just be like, this is all of my favorite players on the court at the same time. And I had the Knicks jersey when I was a little kid, the Patrick Ewing and everything like that, and played a ton of NBA Live 95. So that was kind of the time where I really forged this love for the NBA was around those Knicks teams.
Yeah, we're like in the same boat, I think. I, 94-ish, early 94 was when I really, like, I was 10 years old and I got into the NBA. And that was the same year that the All-Star Game was here at Target Center. Mm. And J.R. Ryder won the dunk contest that year. And I think, if I remember, Scottie Pippen was the All-Star Game MVP.
That's probably right. Yeah. Manny.
J.R. Ryder went like between the legs, which at the time we were like,
nobody had done
between
that
the legs? Are you serious? How did he do that?
And now it's been duplicated like 50 times in the dunk contest since.
And now you do it off the mascot and blow out a candle and touch the top of the backboard and then finally dunk it by the end.
After doing three somersaults. And
with those Timberwolves teams, they were all just so bad for the most part early on that I had no connection to the Timberwolves, felt like no pull from them until they got KG. Yeah. And with KG, that started in the internet, kind of the combination of those things started to branch out from just the teams that I got to see on Sunday to really know who the stars were. And as Derek brought up before we started recording, a lot of the ways that we used to keep track of who the players were through basketball cards.
Yep.
So, like, I had all these KG rookie cards and things like that, and it was fun when they had Sprewell and that sort of era. So I think any time from probably like 1994 through the late 90s was where I was the most hot on basketball. And then it started to fade a little bit for me when Shaq won three straight. I was like, oh man, this is boring. I just can't take this anymore. The league
as a whole.
And mm-hmm. it needed a revolution, really, which we've gotten over the last couple of years.
Those post-Jordan years were just so lean because there was just no talent. I mean, Grant Hill got hurt. He should have been the next guy. I mean, there was Kobe, but I mean, and Duncan, who was a fantastic player. But there, all these guys that came in after, guys like, I think like Marcus Fizer and Eddie Curry were propped up to be big stars that never happened. But funny story about the mid-90s. So I started playing basketball in the mid-90s, and you know, I knew of the Timberwolves. I hadn't really watched them much. And I wanted to go to a game, and it was like 95, I think, KG's rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandma goes, you know, they're not very good right now. So I was like, we'll just wait on that. So then the next year, I think right after they got their rebrand and everything, I finally went to my first game. But they were legitimately bad when parents and grandparents were telling their children, no, they're too terrible to go see right now. Which is probably still what's happening for a while the last 13 years.
Well, and I grew up being very good at basketball. When I was little, that was my sport. And it ended up being baseball. I decided not to play basketball in high school, honestly, because I didn't like the coach. I preferred to just stick with baseball because it might have been my best sport. But when I was playing like the CYO leagues and stuff like that, so we were little 10-year-old kids getting Iverson shoes and Jordan shoes and things like
T-Max.
That. And going around like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm Stockton, you're Malone, that sort of stuff. You know, that sort of combination, that would have been in the earliest part of my enjoying sports, by far number one ahead of everything else. And then it's really fluctuated since then. But now that it's a career, it's kind of different. Like with football, I can't say football is my favorite sport because it's what my job is, to go out there and cover the team.
Yeah.
So you don't really get to be a fan in the same way when it's your job to cover the team. But being here with so many other sports, it's like, I got my Twins hoodie on. I'm a Twins fan now, I guess. This works. And the same thing with the Wolves, where I've started to adopt this team and picked a really good time for that, as the Wolves are now relevant for the first time in a very long time.
So what do you think about fan bases in this town? I mean, you've been here for about 2 years now. And what do you think about how fans sort of react, not just with like the Wolves, but with the Vikings, obviously, with you covering the Vikings, the Wild and the Twins, of course, too. How do you feel about how fans sort of view, and you can even go into the Gophers, too, if you want, just how fans sort of view all of the sports in this town? Is it different from upstate New York where you came from, where it's Bills and Sabres and Syracuse basketball probably a little bit too, but you know, what are the differences there, do you think?
Buffalo is a very angry town when it comes to sports. It is not like that here with so much rage that goes into every Sunday with the Bills. I think people here kind of expect to be disappointed, and then when they are, it's like, ah, well, so much for that. What's coming up next? I'll just wait for the next thing, and we'll see how that goes. And they can sort of move along, where with the Bills, I mean, that is these focus. Every single Sabres game night might as well be like the NFL is here, where it's a buildup on off days. You're breaking down the other team. Like, okay, well, the Dallas Stars are coming to town, and they've got this guy, and they've got that guy. And you're, from a sports radio standpoint, you're bringing on guests from the other city to break down the line combinations of their team because people are that obsessed with that team, even when they're bad.
That's hard to do 82 times a year, too.
It absolutely is. And with so many. But that's all they have, though.
Yeah,
and, right.
And culturally, too, this city has so much more to offer. It's so much bigger. These cities, I should say. I don't want to upset the same. The St. Paul people always take that purposefully.
Yes, we do. We do.
Personally, I mean.
Yeah, we do. Yes.
They do, right? If you say the city or downtown, they're like, well, don't forget about St. Paul.
I'm very defensive
okay,
of my hometown.
All right.
There's a persecution
Paul, yes.
complex, yeah. for sure.
I might have been referring to St. Paul, but fine. I wasn't. But with the Twin Cities, it's so spread out. There's so much to do. There's so many sports to watch that you could kind of bounce from one to the next.
Yeah.
And with Buffalo, it's just soul focused, laser beamed on those two teams. Everything they do is analyzed and talked about and raged over all the time. The Vikings have that, I think, with their fan base that it's 365. And everything else has their hive, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And then everybody else is just, oh, Wolves are good. I'll watch the Wolves. Or Gophers volleyball is good. Let's go to a Gophers volleyball game. I went to one of those. expected sort of like, yeah, probably a handful of people. Place is sold out. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, if you win here, people will support you like crazy is what I found outside of the Vikings. But if you don't, then no one's showing up to Target Field, or Target Center's not going to have a whole lot of people there, a great atmosphere. And at least this time where I've gotten to the Twin Cities, all the teams seem to be going in the right direction outside of maybe the Wild that are just kind of stagnant, but the Twins and Wolves at least are on the rise, and that's fun.
See, and my take on the city is that the losing aspect of it is kind of part of the identity and just kind of the sports woe culture, where it's one of those things like, see, Minnesota sports happens every time. And I think, and I tweeted this to Mackie once, that I think if you were to say like, well, DC sports is probably, you know, the most sorry sports out. They go, well, what about 1998 and the Vikings? What about the Wolves not making the, you know, it's just, we get offended when we put other sports cultures above ours. And I do think that you're right, though. You do have to earn, you know, people's, you know, extra income in this town. I mean, there are so many different ways to spend it where if you suck, people aren't going to support it.
They're going to check out.
And
really
I think
quickly.
Part of the reason the Vikings always have that is because they've never really been bad. You know, they might have that off 5-11 season once a decade, but that's it.
And it might be one of the reasons why Buffalo sports has been bad for so long is that people are there no matter what. That they're filling up the stadium no matter what you do. And it's the previous owner, I would say many times, and the Vikings benefited from this, let good players go. Antoine Winfield, Pat Williams.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen so much anymore, but it probably plays into it a little bit where this town is going to make you work to try and get those dollars. Although for the Wolves, they just started trying recently.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been the last 13 years. And I think that's why we see so much angst with this team like this year, despite the fact that they're, what, 21-13?
It's like an uneasiness about like the success and just waiting for it to come unravel. They're like, that's a sign. That's a sign. It's about to come undone. I'm not getting my heart broken again.
And really, I've growing up here, I've noticed that with every team in this town, there's always, a lot of times people will preface everything with, I'm just worried about yada, 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 yada. Well, I'm just really, well, what if such and such and such and such happens?
Like, what if it doesn't?
Right. Well, it's like with the Vikings this year, and I've been kind of guilty of this myself with like Case Keenum, where I think, well, what if he has that really bad clunker game and it's in the playoffs and it's at the wrong time? And then I have to check myself and say, what if he doesn't? What if he just
plays well? The Ravens won a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer.
Yeah, and it's, Trent Dilfer-type quarterbacks don't win the Super Bowl every year, but it happens, and there's no reason to think that it can't necessarily happen, you know, this year. But with the Wolves, it is, I mean, they're 21-13. They're in first place in their division. Not that divisions mean that much in the NBA as they do in other sports.
You know something odd about
they're
where
fourth
the Wolves
in the West? Like,
the Wolves are two games above the Nuggets and two games behind the Spurs. Just perfectly. Like, they're almost creating their own weird tier of team that could make the jump or could fall back into the middle of the pack.
Isn't that part of why people are angsty about the Wolves, though? That with the Vikings, you can talk yourself into it because it's football. And it's one game that you play against these teams. We've seen elite defenses carry a team all the way to the Super Bowl. You don't always have to win, but we've seen, like, Rex Grossman quarterback a team to a Super Bowl once.
Yep.
It does not happen recently, the last 10 years. It's mostly just great quarterbacks all the way through, which would give you deserved angst. But you could talk yourself into it. Yeah. With the Wolves, if there's anything wrong with the team, you can't talk yourself into you're going to be Golden State. Or even like be allowed in the gym with Golden State. If you have this much wrong with your team and you're 21-13, but some of the losses have been like, oh my gosh, the two to the Suns. How does either of those happen? And when you see
one
that,
without Devin Booker.
Right. When you see that, you go, all right, well, if you're going to lose any games to the Suns, you don't belong in the same gym with Golden State. And that's where you wanted the standard to go when Jimmy Butler got here. You didn't want to be like, well, you know, it's a lot better than before. You wanted to instantly talk about yourself in the same range as some of those teams. Even though you're winning your division, you are not anywhere in the planet and the stratosphere of those teams. And I can imagine if you're a fan that hyped yourself up to that point and thought, oh, maybe we can do this, you've gotten a little dose of reality, even though things are going pretty well.
Well, it happened in 2014 too, and I think the one thing with like the NBA, or really the other three major sports aside from, we haven't mentioned the Lynx yet. I just got to do that. I was going to get angry comments here, so that's my mention. That if you have a bad defense or something like that, I mean, you can get by for, you know, 5, maybe 10 games, but over the course of an 82-game season, you're going to show yourself, and you're going to finish probably where you should, even if you can score with the best of them, or if you don't hit enough threes, you're going to get outshot a lot of times, and you're just going to be a math problem.
Yeah, and I think with Golden State, and I kind of mentioned this, Derek, too, remember last week when we had John Meyer in, Golden State is so good and so perfect in every way, and they're so great at exposing what is wrong with other teams that it just makes any flaws that you have with your team just that much more glaring, because Golden State really does not have any flaws. The only flaws that they would have is if two guys get injured, and then you're like, okay, well, they don't, their depth is gone because they got two guys that are out. I mean, they have stars and they have big names and they share the ball. There's no real impactful egos involved. There's ego everywhere, but their egos don't affect how they play. And the coach is personable and he's funny and he's got some characteristics of his own. And I mean, they have everything. And if you don't have what they have, then it's like, well, you're not, you got to fix this. And this is terrible. And you got to work on this. And I feel like that's kind of what we're at with the Wolves right now. Like, the Wolves are a good team, but they don't look like the Warriors, and they're not as good as the Warriors. So then it's just like, oh my God.
Well, they don't have two of the greatest shooters of all time. They don't have the greatest, probably one of the greatest small forwards of all time in Kevin Durant, who's probably the greatest scorer actually of all time. Draymond Green, who is just a Swiss Army knife. Like, you can't just go and get these players in one offseason.
Yeah.
And the Warriors didn't do that either.
No.
It's really a year-over-year process.
Don't you think that Tibbs being who Tibbs is also plays a role in why people feel angsty about it? Like, he doesn't really connect to a fan base at all. He's a little robo-coach when he's in front of the media, which I don't blame anyone for trying to be that way, because if you are open and honest, you're going to end up being covered a lot, and you're going to end up being tweeted about a lot, or have Deadspin write about you, or Awful Announcing, or any of these number of sites that will put your face up there if you have some sort of quote. Or like if you're Pop or you're Kerr and you've won championships, you kind of can say whatever you want and no one's going to get in your face about it. But
Belichick.
If you're Tibbs and you haven't, then maybe you feel like, I can't really be that way. And then his personality too. The growly voice. If you ask him a question, it's just very basketball. You know, like there is no opening yourself up.
You have to trust the pass.
He's like Mike Zimmer, where he'll give you a lot sometimes, and then you'd be like, wow, I think this is a lot. And then you go back and listen to it. We go, he said nothing.
Yeah.
You have to trust the pass.
I think, you know,
we have to get better each and every day.
The thing with Zimmer, though, is that he has found ways to show himself and his personality a little bit when Bridgewater got hurt, and sort of a sensitivity there and a little bit of emotion after games where he'll growl at the media and whatever else. And I think fans like that. They connect because they get an idea of who you are.
It's also kind of football culture, I think. They think football coach, they think kind of a gruff guy, you know, who's all about the gridiron.
But shows enough of his other side with his foundation and things like that people feel like, oh yeah, he's kind of like your dad. Like he's tough on you, but he loves you. You know, that's how Zimmer comes across. And we can all sort of describe Zimmer's personality to each other.
Yeah.
With Tibbs, you're like, what's Tibbs' personality? Mad, kind of, you know, like
how you figure out Tibbs'
disappointed, you know. He's not mad, he's disappointed.
Ask Tom Thibodeau about a guy that he coached with 25 years ago, or, you know, like Taj or a former player. And he'll light up and he'll go on. He'll tell a story about, you know, playing in this one small gym in South Dakota in the ABA or something random like that. But you ask him, you know, more questions about the current game or the current state of the team, and it's a lot more reserved. And as someone who started covering the team, got credentialed first under Flip Saunders, it's such a departure from that. I mean, even Rick Adelman was very, you know, straight to the point. That's it. But Flip Saunders was just you know, he'd go on, and he'd wind and turn, and it's just not the same in that way, where you really have to work at it with Tibbs.
And I get the idea that Flip would also kind of have a relationship with reporters and things like that.
Yes.
And that is not that way for Tibbs at all. And, you know, you're going to get a little bit of a different look at somebody when reporters know them better and could put stuff out there about how they're what they're really like. And I think that makes him an easy target for people to criticize because they don't feel like they know him at all. He's just this angry yelling guy over on the sideline with the crazy voice, Carl. And you're like, all right, he's just the guy that yells Carl all the time. I mean, just would somebody switch so he'll stop? But that makes it easy for you to go, what does this guy know? What is, this guy can't coach offense at all, and he's supposed to be good at defense, but they're bad at defense, and that's his fault, and maybe the game has passed him by. And I don't really think any of those things. I mean, I think that it has a lot to do with just who you're dealing with as a roster, that it is an imperfect roster. Like you're talking about with Golden State. Not everyone could coach Golden State, as Mark Jackson showed us. But if you're as accomplished of a coach as Tibbs is, I believe that this team, if it had a better roster, would be one of the elite teams in the league. But it's just got gaping holes in it. One of them is named Andrew Wiggins. And then the bench isn't all that good. And I'm not sure that they've really gelled yet and figured out who's supposed to score when. It took the Miami Heat a little while when they put together the super team to decide who was going to score at the end of a game.
Like them almost 40 games, I think.
Yeah.
Right about
there. There was talk about Spoelstra being fired early on. I was like, what? I mean, this guy has turned out to be one of the best coaches in the NBA. And yet it took a while. And that's what I would say, too, from my standpoint, just kind of peripherally focusing on the team when I can, is just, I expected there to be bumps in the road for a team that has been put together mostly in an offseason.
Yeah, it's amazing because this is about, in terms of where I thought their peak would be, as far as like their record and where they were in the standings, this is about what I thought their peak would be this year, was that at best they were probably going to be like a 4 seed, probably win about 50 games and, you know, maybe get out of the first round and then probably lose to Houston or San Antonio or Golden State in the second round.
Well, if they finish 8 games above 500, they're still a 49-ish win team.
Yeah.
Right about there. And that's about what most people thought.
Right. But yet here we are, and everybody is just
hand-wringing.
I saw somebody, I don't even know who it was. I'm watching the Lakers game the other night, Christmas night, and I see somebody got retweeted that this is one of the worst games the Wolves have played this year. And I'm like,
huh? Oh, no.
Huh? Did you see Indiana when they came here? Both games against Detroit, especially the first game against
Detroit.
Even
though Detroit's probably decent, just kind of the process and how they lost those games.
Right. Like, they've had some games this year where it was just really, really, really bad. So, I mean, they're okay. They do some good things. They do some other things that aren't so good. And Matthew, like you said, they're a flawed roster. They need more three-point shooting. They need more, you know, defensive specific players to sort of bring in off their bench to help on that end of the floor. But yeah, they are. They're 21-13 and they're winning some games and they're relevant.
Well, and that's a big change. Yes, at least. That would be like saying, well, the Bills might make the playoffs at 9-7, and then they'll lose in the first round. But at least they finally made it. You kind of go, oh well, I guess you get a participation trophy for that or whatever. Like, do you get a ribbon for being like not the worst team in the league? So I understand fans from that standpoint, and I wouldn't say that everyone's overreacting.
Very dogmatic way to look at the league, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know. Like, if you're not first, you're last. You know, you get. Third place is fired. Second place gets some knives or whatever. What's the line? Isn't that the... Anyway. But I think another part of why this team frustrates people is Andrew Wiggins, though.
Yes.
I think, like, we've gotten to the point where anyone who was saying, guys, give him time. Give him time.
He's
give
out
him
of time. Time now.
Give him time. You are shooting 30% from three-point land, and you're still chucking 5 a game. You're still taking 16 shots a game and shooting 43%. You can get to the basket anytime you freaking want because of your talent, yet you pull up from 18. Like, I watched Antetokounmpo play the other night. Does he ever shoot a shot outside of 3 feet? I mean, because he's so giant
only
and
when
so
he's open.
Fast.
He can't really shoot either. That's
right.
The thing.
No, his shot's hideous, but it goes down enough when he's wide open. Everything else is to the basket, to the basket, to the basket. And if by now Andrew Wiggins hasn't figured out that it's to the basket or nothing because he's not a three-point shooter, that if he hasn't figured that out by now and he doesn't compete by now, which drives me insane, and if he hasn't figured out defensive system by now, how many more years are you going to go with a guy who really just appears to not be a star player in the NBA? I had maybe this last flicker of hope of, well, maybe he'll watch Jimmy and he'll be like, oh, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to try all the time.
Yeah.
And maybe at the end of a game, you're tired. I don't know. We'll give it, but he hasn't done that. And I think that frustrates people. He's a player that is so inefficient. You almost say, I don't know how we could ever win with a player who is like that.
Yeah, he is. And the problem, too, is defensively, he has actually gotten better this year. The problem is it was so bad last year defensively with him that even now as, you know, a slightly below average defensive player, it still seems like it's bad because it's not good yet. It's improved, but it's still not good yet, and it still needs to get a lot better. And we talked about this last week. I just wonder if he's one of those guys that he needs the tempo to be a lot higher for him to have success, because right now the Wolves are one of, I think, what are they, Derek, like 23rd in pace?
Yeah, somewhere about there.
Yeah, and he just seems to be a guy that needs to be in an up-tempo style of play, and that's where he's really, really going to thrive. And right now they're in a situation where, you know, Jimmy's got the ball in his hands a lot. T's got the ball in his hands a lot. They want to get Towns as many touches as they possibly can, and Wiggins is just kind of floating out there, and it's hard for him to really, like, get going. He's just that type of person that he needs something that's going to sort of push him and kick that motor into gear. Otherwise, he's just going to get lost. And I think that's what we're really seeing over the last month or so, that he's been struggling.
Well, with so many players, you feel like if they just have the right circumstances, or they're just used properly, or on and on, if they just play with the right players, or if you just, hey, this guy, the only thing he does is shoot, so you stick him over there and let him shoot. Or this guy's just a rebounder, so find him a role where he can just rebound. With Wiggins, that's hard.
He doesn't really do one thing well.
Yeah. And I think the one thing he does really well is drive to the basket and finish.
Yeah,
but
he just doesn't do it enough.
He does not have the willingness to do that. And maybe part of it is, you watch what LeBron went through the other day of just getting fouled 16 times by Kevin Durant. Yeah, it's a very difficult job. And I cover hockey a lot, as you mentioned. They talk about hitting in hockey. Everyone has to hit in hockey for the most part, outside of the most skilled players. But if you're not hitting yourself, you're getting hit by other people. If you've got the puck a lot, you're getting hit a lot by other people. It's not fun. It's not fun to be Sidney Crosby, who gets slashed and hacked and checked and all sorts of things. It's not fun to be the guy who goes to the rim every single time and gets poked in the eye and gets knocked to the floor. It takes a toughness. It takes a competitiveness that I did not see there when he played in college. And I think that's really stuck with him as his reputation, is that first impression of him not looking like he cared that he was in a huge game at the end of his college career. And then that sort of carried over for me of, like, how do you correct that? How do you correct a guy who simply does not want to do what it takes to be a great player? And which I think is just for him, drive to the basket. If he scored 14 points a game or 16 points a game, whatever, but took five fewer shots that were no chance shots, I think this team is in much better shape right now. And I think we'd feel more confident about this team because no one on the Warriors does this. No one on the Warriors goes 6 for 20, right? No one on the Rockets goes 6 for 20 unless all 20 are from 3-point land. And then they won't do it very often. So you have this black hole player who is kind of just bringing everybody else down. And even though I know it's talked about ad nauseum, that's my observation of watching more and more of him, is just possession killer with those shots.
Well, yeah. And I know I talked about this last week a bit, too. In his first couple of years, he looked like he was going to be a perennial top 10 finisher in free throws per game. And the last 2 years, his free throw numbers have dropped. And it's like that spin move, you cannot guard it at all.
Yeah.
And like we said before, he's so good within 10 feet of the basket that he almost should have been a center like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Because he shoots about 70% right at the rim. And that's incredible. So, I mean, why aren't you trying to use your athleticism and your physical gifts to get to the rim every time? Because you're either A, going to the line, or B, you're getting the foul, you're getting the shot. There's no reason not to.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe he's been watching a lot of Kobe Bryant film, and he is trying to sort of emulate the, you know, post up from 17 feet away, mm-hmm. and then turn, you know, two dribbles and turn around fadeaway shot. Kobe was great at that. Jordan was great at that.
Kobe was an inefficient chucker a lot of the times, though.
Yeah. Well,
but you mentioned, though, Kobe hit 85% of his free throws or somewhere in that range. And Jordan hit a very high percentage, too. And what last check, Wiggins is in his 60% range.
And that's down from the rest of his career. Like, LeBron's never shot above, what, 77, 78%. So he's never been great, which I guess you can't be amazing at everything. But he just needs to hit that 75%. And, I mean, with the volume that he would get, they're easy looks. God knows he's not guarded, so, I mean, his job would be a lot easier. I mean, even if he could get back to that level and get the volume up, the team would be in a much better position than him taking contested long twos that they'll gladly give him all day.
And I think the other issue with Andrew, too, is he's watching all the, you know, all the old Kobe stuff and the Jordan stuff, but I don't think he realizes, okay, Jordan became a fadeaway mid-range jump shooter when he got older,
right.
When he realized, okay, I'm 30, 31, 32 years old. I'm at a stage in my career now where I need to preserve my body a little bit longer, and I can't drive and finish the way I did when I was 23, 24 years old. But Andrew has to realize he's 22, he's going to be 23.
He's like, 22,
you can do this. You can do this. You can do what you do great right now for the next 6-7 years and be terrific at it, and then sort of behind the scenes you're working on the fadeaway shot that you want to take right now, and that now you're taking it maybe once or twice a game, but now you're taking that shot 6-7 times a game. It's like you're not good at that yet. You haven't mastered that skill yet. You've got to maximize what you do well right now because you are still a young player with a lot of basketball still in front of you.
And as great as those guys were, their style of basketball is just gone.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I was watching, just because I'll do this, on YouTube, a game where something like Jordan scored 50, and it was against Shaq, who had like 30 and 20. So it's like a classic game, watching it on YouTube. And it was amazing to see those individual performances. But every time down the floor with Jordan, post, 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 turnaround jumper,
it's
and
boring.
Everybody mm-hmm. else is just kind of like, yep, over here, standing here watching you play the basketball, one-on-one with that guy.
Judd Bushler has his hands on his hips in the corner.
Yeah, right. Right. And, you know, Horace Grant will clean up the rebound if he misses or something like that. And even with then Shaq on the other side, post, in the post, back a guy down, dunk in his face. You might have had a couple transition baskets in that game, and that was about it. And for Andrew Wiggins, maybe if he was playing during that time, he would have been phenomenal at it, at playing from the post all the time. Although I think those other guys are much better shooters from that. But maybe it would have fit his game. Now it's you're either dunking or you're shooting a three because that's the most efficient mm-hmm. way to play the game, and it flies up and down the court. And so maybe it is a bit of a combination of Wiggins won't let it go that he wants to be Kobe, mm-hmm. and Tibbs won't let it go that it's 2017 and you need to have your team play in transition. The other problem is, though, with Tibbs, if you're going to play people 48 minutes a night, your best players, you can't have them flying up and down the floor. Mm-hmm. Everybody's just going to die. And, like, you see Jimmy at the end of a game where he's just, like, out of energy, and that's without playing the super high pace back and forth, up and down. And, you know, maybe it's kind of that trade-off that he's making. He's decided, well, you know, yeah, we could try to play like the Rockets, but then we would have to play our backups, and our backups are not good at basketball.
Did you see the Sixers game from a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
The Wolves played him in overtime,
yes.
And Taj Gibson is, like, at the end of the third quarter, he is laid out like on the floor,
hands on his knees.
Yeah, he's
that
just
was the night that you
DM
me saying if I, when I come on the pod, we're just talking about how great Jimmy Butler is. That's it. I'm only talking about
Jimmy
Butler.
When he hit the game-tying shot there, right? Was it a game-tying three?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. So we've got all these complaints about this team. They're not perfect. They're not the Warriors. But what keeps me watching every Wolves game is Jimmy Butler. Yep. I couldn't like him any more than I do. Everything he does is great. He's turned around the shooting a bit. He'll be as aggressive as you need him to be. He plays hard every minute of the game, and he can do anything. He can hit a big three. He could drive to the hoop. He did that the other night with a key basket at the end, driving to the hoop. It's like, what does this guy not do? I never thought that he was this level of a player, only seeing every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But, you know, national TV, they used to joke about Rajon Rondo. One of my buddies is a big Celtics fan. Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah. If they're on national TV, triple-double. A lot of the other time, whatever. And with Butler, then we get the local broadcast. You see, it doesn't matter. They could be playing the Suns. They could be playing the Lakers.
They could be in Sacramento in mid-February.
Yeah, and he's going to play all the way, all the time. And he just plays with this extra, like, knowing his background story, he plays with this extra, like, man, they're not going to let me eat after the game if I don't play.
I might get cut if I don't leave it on the floor.
Yeah, he plays like that, and some guys have that, and I think that, you know, especially coming up watching the NBA in its earlier days in the 90s, you had a number of players who would play with that style, and then seeing Iverson rise up playing with that style where every single night it was just this guy's playing for his livelihood, and those are the players that you kind of connect to more than somebody you feel like with Wiggins where, I kind of play when I want to play or whatever like that.
Yeah.
It's like Jimmy thinks that they're going to send him back to the G League or whatever if he doesn't play, you know, give everything. So he's not perfect every night. I mean, he's not LeBron, but that takes him from being a pretty good player to, I think, one of the better players in the league.
Yeah, he just fascinates me because he is the absolute, his playing style is so blue collar. It is so, I'm coming here and I'm going to go to work. This is what I do, and I'm going to give 150% effort every single night.
And if you guys want to join me, I'll see you on the court.
Right. And it has been like that really since I remember seeing him on a radio show, national radio show, and he was talking about, because he's from Texas, grew up in Texas,
Tomball, Texas. He'll tell you every chance he gets.
Yeah, and he was talking about how he grew up a Longhorns fan, cheering for the Longhorns, and then like that Longhorns fandom stopped when they didn't recruit him.
Mm.
And that was, I think it was Rick Barnes at the time, who's now coaching my Tennessee Vols, ranked like 20th in the country right now. Just, you know, giving my Vols some love. But he was just talking about how they didn't recruit him. And then, you know, he ended up going to community college, and then he ended up at Marquette. And then at Marquette, he's a good college player, but he's the last pick of the first round by the Bulls. He's just, that chip on his shoulder never goes away. It's always there.
Tom Thibodeau has talked about that, how he was just so amazed by Jimmy. He would just never take, you know, he always put in the extra work, you know, as if he was playing for his job each and every single day, not just game. I mean, he was always, you know, one of the first guys in the gym. I think he always said that Tibbs was always there before him, even though he was there before all the players. And it's just really that work ethic that I think you just hope kind of rubs off on these guys, and just that attitude. That is just kind of cool to see. And, I mean, there's really nothing with Jimmy that he – I mean, you feel like the Jimmy Butler you see on TV is the Jimmy Butler that is probably off the court too.
I also appreciate his willingness to hold everyone else to a standard and just keep saying it.
Yep.
After every game, it's defense, everyone. Does anybody else want to try? I'm out there trying. Where are you guys trying? Is anybody else? Like, I love that he's willing to do that. It might grate on guys, but at the same time, it's like a good coach who keeps pushing you, that he refuses to back off of this thing that I've won before to some extent. If you want to win, if you want to be relevant, because you guys have won nothing, you haven't even got to the playoffs, any of you, If you want to get there, then you're going to have to raise your level to where I'm at. And that, I think that's part of my Wiggins frustration, is I haven't seen it yet, but maybe over a number of years, if they don't make a move with him, if he's part of the long term, maybe you do see that as he gets into his mid-20s. We have seen plenty of players get into their mid-20s and finally hit their stride, guys who would have spent 4 years in college instead, and then we call this guy a rookie and this guy a rookie, but this guy's 4 years older. Like, this guy's got three kids and a beard, and the other guy's, like, can't vote yet. And they're both NBA rookies. And maybe that's what it takes, is a year or longer of Jimmy Butler saying, this is going to be the standard of Wolves basketball, and that's it. And I'm the superstar, so I can say that. And it's one of the nice things about basketball, too, is players will call each other out, or they'll tell you after a game. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always happen in
the other sports. Subliminal messages on Instagram.
Yes, they'll tell you.
Yeah.
Right. Looks like Taj and Karl-Anthony Towns. How many times has Taj, you know, chewed out Towns for, you know, not getting back and complaining too much about calls? And the next time it happens, Towns is right back down the court.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Jimmy calls out the defensive effort, and all of a sudden, wow, Towns' D looks really good tonight. Looks a lot better.
And from that standpoint, I think you do have to give Tibbs credit. Like, oh, he's just making it Bulls North or whatever. Like, okay, well.
They're good players, though. Right, like, I don't understand that.
But Taj Gibson is an important kind of guy to have some of that toughness there, that it becomes almost cliche in every sport to say, oh, we need to be tough. We need to be tough. But it's true. It's true in basketball. Yeah. If the Warriors don't bring toughness, they're not the same team. But that's what makes them so hard, is that they can shoot like crazy, but they've always got guys who will, jump up and kick you in the junk or whatever, right? Like Draymond. And you always have guys who will battle you all the time with that team. And if they're the standard you're looking at, and you're Jimmy Butler, you've got to say, well, if we want to be like them, they don't take possessions off, and they do have that toughness, and that's what we should try to emulate as well. So I appreciate every aspect of Jimmy Butler, and the fact that he also kind of has this where he lets you in with his play in terms of who he is and where he's been and the chip on his shoulder, and he lets you in a little bit with how he talks, but also not as much either. I mean, mm-hmm. he said he doesn't want to tell his story anymore. He doesn't want to be like Adam Thielen with the Vikings, where today it's Sports Illustrated, ESPN, and New York Times, and everybody's going to come out and do the same story. He doesn't want anybody to be doing that about him.
I've been telling that for 4 years. And, that's why.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. that's for sure. But he doesn't seem like a brand guy. He doesn't seem like buy my shoes sort of guy. I like that about him, too, because some of these players, you think that they are out for, yeah, sure, I want to win, I guess, but I also want all my brand stuff, you know? And you don't get that sense with Jimmy Butler. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't get any of that from him.
He seems very much like a guy that, even though he has a lot of money, he's not just spending. And again, I don't know him personally. I don't know what he does in his personal life, but he
might own five Ocelots. We don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, he might
he's a different dude.
But he doesn't seem like the type of guy that is like that he'd be showing off his house on MTV Cribs.
Yeah, there was
he doesn't really seem like that type of guy.
He'd be too busy being in the gym or working out or something.
Right, yeah.
There was a thing in the off season that I watched with him where I forget who it was, whatever website came to his house, and he was talking about how he just sort of sits around and plays cards with his day one friends. And like that's what he does. Mm-hmm. If it's not basketball, he's just sitting there. He's got this giant house. It has a river running through it.
Mm-hmm.
Same, right? and that's all he does. Like, I play basketball and I play cards and talk with my friends who have been there for me since before I was a basketball player. And that's what I do in my life. And I thought that was kind of cool with him, that he isn't like, oh, hold on, my publicist is calling, so, you know, you gotta, whatever, or I'm starting my Big Baller Brand shoe, or whatever it's going to be, you know, any of that stuff. And I don't mind if players are out to make as much money as they can, that's fine.
They're prerogative, yeah.
But at the same time, I think I can appreciate that about Jimmy, that he is just all work.
Well, I think that fits in kind of with, you know, the personalities of Towns and Wiggins, too. I mean, because Towns and Wiggins are going to be a part of this core, especially with Wiggins signing that max deal. That, I mean, those guys talk so much about, like, yeah, we like staying home and playing video games. I mean, right. I'm sure they go out, they have a good time like every other 22-year-old, but they're not, you know, like in it to go out, you know, to the strip club like Pac-Man Jones and blow a bunch of money. Like, I think Jimmy fits in well with that. Like, yeah, I like to have nice things, but for the most part, you know, I like to keep a small crew and, you know, just kind of lie low.
Yeah. I think about too, Matthew, when I think about like those Knicks teams from the 90s, like how perfect a fit would Jimmy have been?
Like, oh man.
With those teams, like that, I almost feel like that's the kind of player that Patrick Ewing was missing with the Knicks in the mid 90s. Like that, a player like
turn John
Jimmy
Starks
Butler,
into Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, that probably would have worked out pretty well for the Knicks.
I am still salty about that last game 7 against the Rockets. What is that? The 95, 94,
94,
94.
Mm-hmm. John Starks was like 3 for 20 or that's something it. Like that. Yeah.
Stop shooting. Just stop. Like, I know that you're a confident guy, but this is game 7. Like, there isn't another week where you can get your shot back on.
That was me and Kenyon Martin in 03 against the Spurs in the finals in that game 6 where he went like 2 for 21 or something, but he just kept shooting. Yeah.
And it was close. And that game 7 was close, too, and he just would not stop shooting, and that basically cost them the NBA Finals.
So you have four other guys to pass the ball to.
Yeah. And, I mean, he was probably the closest thing, though, because I remember him being a very go-about-your-business type of player.
Tenacious, kind of a tenacious player.
Yeah, I think that he was undrafted, maybe, right? Starks,
I think so.
That he was not some like top draft pick or anything like that, and kind of just rose up and got better. And maybe he's the closest thing to that. If you don't have the absolute mega star players, this would be the next best thing.
Yeah,
I don't know that how often teams can win without the super 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 mega star players, top threes, LeBron or Steph Curry, but. If you're going to at least compete, if you're going to be in that conversation, this team does need to get more Jimmy Butler-y and a lot less Andrew Wiggins-y.
Yeah.
Or Andrew Wiggins needs to rise his play to be at that level because you have a star who can get you in that conversation. But getting over the top is going to take a much more complete team. Eventually, the Warriors, this is a thing too about the timeline. Eventually, the Warriors are not going to be quite as strong as this.
And I feel like it's just going to hit us, whether they blow up the core or just someone figures it out.
And when that door opens, you need to be the team that is there and yes. How you build that up. Now, that's the thing. I don't know how you build that up from here to get to that point. But with the Rockets, you might have said the same thing. You might have said, you know, Harden, he's good, but I don't know if he can ever get him over the top. And then they've really filled out that roster nicely and add Chris Paul, who's fit well, even though I think people didn't think he would.
Which is weird.
Which still gives you... So it gives you some hope with the Wolves team that this might be the beginning and not the peak of the mountain.
All right, let's talk Lynx here because we did mention earlier that we were going to talk Lynx.
Yes.
And I know that you have, since you've gotten here, you've really, really grown on this team. And certainly, I think for the fans here, they have certainly grown on this community. And you recently did basically they were like power rankings, right, for – basically all the Minnesota athletes.
Yes.
And you had Miss Maya Moore at the top.
Is there any debate
that
Maya
so.
Moore is at the top? I mean, unless you're just one of those people who's like, women's sport. Like, but people around here aren't really like that so much because the Lynx are so successful.
The majority is not, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you're always going to have idiots. But,
yep.
I mean, if you have your head pulled out of the sand and are looking around, you see who the most successful team is by far. And the head of that team is Maya Moore. And I think that we are... not to steal this from all the athletes, but blessed to have her in our city. To have an athlete of that caliber, one of the greatest to ever play the game of basketball, that we can mosey on over to downtown St. Paul and watch her play, or Target Center this year, last year in St. Paul, because of the renovations. She's just everything. Like, the complete player, the complete athlete, the complete representative of your city. She. What did you tell me earlier, that she's never gone 2 years in a row without winning a championship in her whole life?
It's like since middle school.
What?
So basically, since she's been playing high school basketball, she's never gone consecutive years
without
winning a championship.
Can we get the Skip Bayless soundbite of all she does is win?
But it's true. I mean, that is she just wins at every level possible. She has won. And it's I mean, I could say it's unbelievable, but it's totally believable because it is true.
Well, what I thought was remarkable about last season is that she was not the best player on that team in that one singular season, just the way that she could, I don't want to say defer to Cynthia Fowles or Sylvia Fowles, but just, I mean, Sylvia Fowles carried that team. I mean, she was as dominant as you could be, and she was just there like, yeah, I'm still here. I'm still engaged. I think that's the difference between a player, I feel like someone in this town, but between a player like Andrew Wiggins and Amaya Moore is that you don't need the ball in your hands, and you just know what to do, and you know what it takes night in, night out in every possession, and what you need to do and what the team is asking of you to do. Because, I mean, Cheryl Reeve consciously decided to center that team more around Sylvia Fowles last year than Maya Moore, and Maya Moore was still successful. She wasn't an MVP candidate, but they don't win. They certainly don't win a title without her.
Right.
Well, and when it came to the WNBA playoffs, Maya and Fowles ended up with the same amount of points, and Maya hit 52% of her threes in the playoffs. She's a great shooter all the time, but when you're talking about stepping up at the biggest moments, too, and being willing to share the basketball, so it's not even a selfish player, either. She's one of the greatest of all time, but probably could score 30 points a game if she wanted to, but maybe would have to take some inefficient shots to do it. And it seems like now she can make those tough shots where she's fading away one way or the other, or a pull-up three at full speed. She could do anything, but she'll decide to often make the smarter play and sometimes defer down low, especially if they have an advantage. You'll be talking about games where Sylvia Fowles ends up with 30 points just because she was plowing the other person out of the lane. Like, well, okay, they don't have a big. We're just going to dump down all day, and we're going to win the way we need to win, as opposed to I need to get my 20 and you need to get your 20. But I don't know in my lifetime that I have ever seen a player who does everything well. I mean, maybe every once in a while on the defensive end, she'll take some risks where I go, ah, Maya, trying to get that steal, right? You know, but other than that, just the absolute complete basketball player. And then a professional, too, where you feel like she is such a great representative of the Twin Cities and someone who will go overseas and play, or she'll, you know, do a number of different things. She'll play in the Olympics, wherever else. And you can look at her and say, man, this is like the greatest basketball player on earth that we get to come see. And it amazes me all the time. And now she's even become more vocal societally in addressing some social issues that maybe she didn't before. But now I think, as you see with LeBron James and Steph Curry and a number of other great players, as they get into a certain age and they've accomplished so much, it's kind of like that's the natural next step in basketball, is to use your platform for positive things societally, which is another part that I really love about the game. In football, you feel like, oh, somebody makes a statement like, oh, great, they get to not have a job anymore. Or they get to, you know, face so much scrutiny on Twitter or in their locker room or whatever else. Whereas basketball promotes that type of atmosphere. And I really appreciate that. And I think Maya stepping into that light now with what she's doing recently is like, all right, well, you could not become more of a complete NBA or WNBA superstar, basketball superstar, than you are.
Yeah. And I think, and I love the fact that the leagues, you know, talking about the NBA and the WNBA, they have really, not only are they saying, okay, yeah, do it, you know, say what you want, and you're free to speak your piece, but they've really sort of embraced it, and they've almost encouraged their players to sort of step up to the forefront and voice your opinion on certain social issues. And I always crack up at the stick to sports crowd that's like, well, I don't care about your politics or your, you know, whatever beliefs on things. And it's like, well, you have to remember these people are human beings as well. And you have no more right to express your opinion on things than that particular athlete does. You know, it just the stick to sports crowd just always cracks me up.
I mean, I think a major point of this, like Maya, her thing has become, you know, the prison system, right? And when we're talking about people who get unfair sentences to what they've done, she was talking on a recent podcast about somebody who was 16 years old and got accused of robbery and was put away for like 30 years or whatever. Like, I mean, really, a
16 years for robbery.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And that's it. And that, she's talking on this podcast about that. And, you know, what we end up with LeBron and Curry and everything else, like maybe you see where Curry, the president, end up tweeting stuff. But what it usually is an attempt to push for society to be better. I mean, overall. Like, you can argue one way or the other that you like this politician or that politician, or you vote this way or that way, but you can't tell me that it's a good thing to have Trayvon Martin shot in the street. Like, that is not arguable. So when LeBron comes out and he puts the black hoodie on and he says it's not acceptable to have that happen in our society, I think when you have athletes who are already the superstar trying to push us to be better as a society, I have a lot of respect for that, especially when there always will be that other noise that comes at you, that if you're going to use it, you're also going to face a lot of criticism and scrutiny from people. And the fact that Maya Moore is doing what she's doing now, too, and getting into that sort of crowd of athletes making those statements, it's almost like if you have so many of those athletes saying we are going to push for this society to be better, then it drowns out all the noise and all the hateful people who are going to come at you.
And well, it's nice to see people that are just aware and that they're not sort of pretending that these sort of things, because they're in a position to where they don't have to experience a lot of these things. It's nice to know that they are at least aware that these things are happening and going on, and that they're just not trying to just block
out.
They're
not in a bubble.
Like, yeah, they're not trapped in some sort of bubble.
Well, I think in a lot of the ways, too, I mean, you look at some, you know, people, there's some people, usually the stick to sports crowd, that don't want people, you know, who would otherwise probably be in the more marginalized population to have a sort of platform, and to see them use it as a definitely a threat to the status quo and the way things are. So I think it's great, you know, to be able to use that voice and your resources to really impact change. Look at Jabari Parker. I mean, you look at anyone who's talking about, you know, violence here, violence there, and some idiot will always go, what about violence in Chicago? And, well, okay, Jabari Parker, you know, he spends his time, his money into that. It's like, well, if you care so much, what are you doing, Mr. Right. Twitter egg? And yet, yeah. Jabari Parker is out there, you know, investing his own money to better his own community from afar.
And isn't this so much just basketball, too? Like, basketball is no masks, no helmets. Mm-hmm. Like, you are out there. One of the things I love about the game is how much it reveals about you, that you can sit there and watch someone play basketball and you can see who they are. Like, if you're sitting close, especially, you see people revealed out there. You are vulnerable. You are who you are playing this game. And that's why when you see people also use their platforms that they have to be who they are, it's part of the thing that endears me to the game. That football, as much as I love it, one of the things I love about it is it's like chess. It's like these are all pieces and your strategy, you go there, and you try to get an advantage this way strategically, and we're drawing it up on the whiteboard and all this stuff. But they're just pawns, mm-hmm. or they're just pieces moved around, and like, they're not treated really often like they're people unless it's somebody that rise all the way to the very, very top.
Yeah.
Where basketball, it's like you feel like you know everybody on the court by watching them play, and then you get even more out of that experience by knowing their background or by knowing how they feel about society or what they want to do to use the money that they have. I mean, the money in the NBA is so freaking absurd. I mean, there are players who aren't good, who are sitting on benches making like $10 million. What's Cole Aldridge make? Make like $8 million?
Seven.
What? Like, what? $7 million is like Kyle Rudolph's contract. He scores all the touchdowns. Like, so if you're going to make that much money, then a lot of these guys are turning that around and doing a lot of good things about it. And
well, if anyone was going to get a max deal, look at Gorgui Dieng. Who's going to turn that around and put it back into Senegal? Like, that's the cool thing. And, like, one thing, too, like, you touched on, like, football. Well, I mean, I love hockey. I mean, the Red Wings are probably my favorite sports team overall, if not, even though it's not my favorite sport. But you just, NHL players are so sterile. Yep. I mean, you don't get a sense to who they are. Like, Sidney Crosby's boring. He's basically Joe Maurer with skates, I feel like.
Yeah.
You don't really get a sense
no,
of who
right.
he is. Connor McDavid was asked about, you know, the protests earlier, I think this year, or someone like that. And just the most disappointing non-answer ever.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, you know, you're like, oh, a young guy, this or that, just nothing. And, you know, PK Subban, you know, a guy who's been, who's fun. But even he just, you know, just gave like some nondescript, just, well, you know.
And part of that's the league too, right? The league just...
Well, there's a lot more to
frowns
risk
upon
too,
it so much.
It's the league. It's the culture. It's very much like you have to be team first. Don't ever be selfish. And it leads to a lot of really boring hockey, I think, because there are players. This is why Canadians would hate the Russian players, because they would be able to make great skill plays and they would go out there and do that. And they'd be like, oh, no, you were supposed to pass on that play. Or why aren't you hitting people more? You should be hitting people more instead of making those skill plays. And it drives me crazy. The stuff like you're talking about, this unwillingness to say anything about what's going on around them. Yeah, I mean, but I also think that the hockey players are very sheltered, like, mm-hmm. in their lives. You get sent off to play junior hockey, and there you're in that sort of culture, and then you go to the minor leagues, and you're in that culture. You go to the in the NHL, you're in that culture. With the NBA, there's always, and I know this has changed with AAU, and it's frustrating, but there's always this thought in the back of my mind, like, balling out on the street, being who you are. You know, yeah. just playing street ball, that at the end of the day, that's kind of what this is. And, you know, it doesn't have that feel from all these other sports that are so rigidly organized, that these players didn't form who they were just playing for fun, that it has to be, when you play hockey, you have to dump the puck at this right exact time or your coach is going to bench you. And it sucks the personality out of it. It's one of my least favorite parts of the game.
That was fantastic. Thank you, Matthew Collar.
Oh, I know.
That was great.
Yeah,
that was. I don't even know what to add to that, because that's just, I mean, that's everything that I have been thinking for so long. And I'm a hockey guy. Like, I like hockey, but it is, you know, I've been following and paying attention to the NHL for 20 years, since I was 10, 11, 12 years old. But I've always just, it's always been like the number four sport to me, because it's, I can't connect with the mm-hmm. players. And yep. the NBA is always, the reason why I've always been in love with the NBA is because the game itself has changed in the last 20, 25 years, but there are still so many different personalities, and you're turning on the TV
there
and you're
characters.
Seeing, yes, there's characters, and you're seeing, like, I'm seeing Paul George with the Indiana Pacers last year, and the Pacers are not having a good year. And he's doing like Gatorade commercials, like, and yeah. he's and yeah. Paul Pierce is a good or not yeah. Paul Pierce, Paul George is a really good player, but he's like the 10th or 12th best player in the NBA right yeah. now.
Well, look at Karl-Anthony Towns entering his second year, already had endorsements on television.
Yeah.
You were already seeing Jack Link's ads where he's shirtless and a vest. Peddling beef jerky.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing the visibility this league has.
Life goals, right?
Yeah, it just because it's grown and grown.
You know, the other part of it, too, is if you really, really know hockey, then you're able to see when guys play with a lot of heart, things like that. I mean, and the same thing sure. would go for football. You go back and look at the tape where there are offensive linemen late in a game where you're losing and they're just grinding away and finishing a block and stuff like that. So you can see, I'm not saying that every sport doesn't have that. Baseball has that with
right.
catchers who catch 120 games a year, and it takes a lot of heart to be that guy, to be the leader on a team and to battle like that. And where I started really valuing that part of sports was I was talking to a baseball scout one day, and he said, you know, one of the keys that I look for is guys who show a lot of courage and a lot of heart, because I have to watch them a lot to be able to see whether that comes out, because those are the guys from the minor leagues who make it all the way up to the top if they don't have the elite talent. And where I think basketball lends itself, because you are so out there and vulnerable when you play, that you really can see. You could see the courage, you could see the heart, you could see how Jimmy Butler plays all the time. And that's why, like, watching Allen Iverson for me was almost like an emotional experience. Like, if you're at a concert or something, you know what I'm talking about, with that type of energy that comes mm-hmm. over you when it's just perfect. Watching Iverson play at his size, with yeah. the way he had to play to succeed, with all that he went through to get there, if you've ever seen the 30 for 30, it's unbelievable, yep. right? And you think, like, you know what? This guy isn't perfect. He isn't like Maya, who's just perfect. Mm-hmm. He's got his flaws, but that's what makes this so freaking beautiful right now.
That 0-1 Sixers team, they had no chance to beat the Lakers in the finals that year. No chance. But that team, they didn't play pretty. It was Iverson and basically a bunch of role
players.
Eric Snow and Aaron McKee. And it was Iverson and a lot of role players. But that team to me was so fun because it was Iverson putting that team on his back and just out of sheer will and desire and heart and just giving it everything he had, he basically willed that team to the NBA Finals. It was him and, I mean, no disrespect to those other guys, but they had no business going to the finals. Mm-hmm. They had being as good as they were mm-hmm. for that year. That was a 56-57 win team, number one seed in the East. But they had no, with the way they were constructed, they had no business being that good. But they were, and it was just this one guy who, like you said, undersized shooting guard, 6 feet tall, 165 pounds, playing a position where you needed to be typically 5 or 6 inches taller and 20 or 30 pounds heavier. Mm-hmm. And he is willing this team to an NBA, to the NBA finals and winning that first game against the Lakers. It was incredible.
And it always frustrated me when he would get painted as sort of just being like aloof, the practice thing, and I think it was more somebody who was so severely damaged as a young person mm-hmm. with the things that he went through, had to go to jail over some fight that happened at a bowling alley, right? Mm-hmm. And he would still be there probably if he didn't get pardoned and was allowed to come out and eventually go to college and all that. But, I mean, you think about that, the racism that he endured in that town when he went through that, his family living in a one-room shack, more or less, his mom, it was insinuated that she had a major drug issue, that where he came from was so tough and so difficult. It's amazing that he was even there. And then, like we talked about with Jimmy, that playing every single night, like you feel like you're going to get sent back if you don't play hard every night. And yeah, you know what? Somebody who goes through all that, I don't think any of us can come anywhere close to relating to what that must do to you as a person and how much that must impact your ability to handle having a bunch of money, to handle having stardom and all those things. And I think that sort of got twisted to he's a gangster or he, is this guy that you'd never want. He's selfish or you wouldn't want him on your team. Like, I would take the guy with that level of heart, that level of toughness, pound for pound, probably the most skilled basketball player ever, if you're talking about considering his size.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I take that all day long. I think as I've even gone on and covered sports more, he's become my favorite basketball player of all time, even though when I was watching him, he was just a part of that conversation. But as I've gone on and I've covered mm-hmm. players who are jackasses or who don't have any heart or whatever else, all the things that might be said about him, like he became more special to me from what I got to see him do.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, you guys remember when, everyone kind of public opinion kind of turned against Vince Carter and all that. Then there was a Beyond the Glory about him. A while ago.
Was that when he, what did he do? Did he go to somebody's graduation?
He went to his own graduation because that was his mother's wish. But at the same time, his brother was going to jail.
Right.
Was in jail. So he had family turmoil. His family friend manager was stealing money from him.
Right.
And then I guess he was just playing just so pissed off for so many years. And then you look at what he did in the Olympics to Frederick Weiss. And I guess they were interviewing people and they were like, oh, he was just playing so angry. And I guess Frederick Weiss that was really kind of the story of it, just because how much he had going on. And people are like, well, does he really care about basketball? Oh, he's mm-hmm. dogging it. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, he has so much else going on, and he's still, trying to push through and come in every day and, try to make the best of a bad situation.
Well, what was the deal with Iverson and the practice rant? Was his, like, one of his best friends had just like passed away.
Yeah. Right?
That was something like that. And that has like, that never got talked about. When that whole practice thing came out with, with Larry Brown and all that, Like, nobody even really acknowledged that.
If I was getting nagged by the media about practice, then yeah, not even a game, I'd probably be a little annoyed at that point, too.
The part that I love out of that rant so much is not just the practice, saying it over and over again. It's when he says, the game that I would die for, and you're like, I believe you.
Yeah. Like, you know? The game that you know, the where I play every game like it's my last, and that's AI. Matthew Collar, we're like well over an hour into this thing, and I wish we could just sit here and just talk for...
Just keep it rolling,
but we do have to get out of here at some point. Thank you. This was fantastic.
I enjoyed it, and you know what? When the Wolves are in the playoffs, call me back. Break down some X's and O's with basketball for you.
We'll have our people call your people.
get a hold of my agent.
That is Matthew Collar. He covers.
Buy my shoe. You guys get the X's and O's collar football shoe.
We'll check it out. Seriously, though, dude. Thank you for coming in. We certainly appreciate it. Good stuff. That is Matthew Collar. He covers the Minnesota Vikings and a little bit of Minnesota Wild as well for 1500ESPN.com. Follow him on Twitter at Matthew Collar. Pretty simple, straightforward Twitter handle. And check his stuff out. It's good stuff. Thanks to you at home or wherever you may be for listening to this podcast. We, of course, are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Lots more basketball left to go here this season. Enjoy it to the best of your ability. Thanks for listening. I'm Manny Hill. And we'll talk to you next time. Happy New Year.